born, the astronauts would still be alive. No, you're wrong. I deny it, but my mind is racing. Is that really the reason? Have I really felt like their deaths were my fault all these years? Hundreds of lives lost. Because of me? The torpor technology failed, I say, weak and uncertain now in the face of his conviction. There was nothing that could have saved them. Even if I hadn't been born, they would still have died. He squeezes his hand tight around both of my wrists. I hear the bones creak and pain shoots up my arms.
You know that's not true. Your parents were supposed to wake up my mom and dad 5 years into the journey. They were going to take over as caretakers while your parents went into stasis. But then you were born, so they stayed awake to raise little baby Romy. And my parents died, along with hundreds of other astronauts.
But any mother would choose their baby over stasis, however important the mission was. NASA had even told them to stay awake. But he doesn't let me speak.
If Talia hadn't been so selfish, then my parents would be alive right now. They might even have noticed the failure in the stasis pods and woken everyone up before it was too late. Instead, everyone is dead.
It's not my mother's fault she got pregnant, I say, refusing to accept that he's right. I know that my mother felt guilty about the astronauts, but I never really believed that she was responsible. How could she be? Accidents happen. You can't blame all of this on a mistake.
She didn't just accidentally get pregnant. She must have removed her birth control. All female crew members were fitted with IUD coils. It was intentional. She knew what a risk it would be to the mission, and she did it anyway. She destroyed everything for you.
When I turn to her, I can see from her expression that Jay is right. I was never a happy accident. Suddenly, so much of my childhood makes sense. This really is her fault. She knew that. The reason she couldn't look at me for years after the astronauts died was because she felt guilty. My brain stops fighting to deny this. Jay is right. My mother chose to have a baby, and because of that, she held herself responsible for the deaths of hundreds of astronauts. But that isn't enough to explain everything he has done to me. Even if it is her fault, why did you make up all those lies to me? I say, salty tears dripping into my mouth. Why the games? Why did you invent the UPR? If all you want is revenge, why not just kill me when you arrived? Why torture me for months like that?
I was telling the truth when I said I was curious about you. That's how it started. Then I realized that I had the perfect opportunity to make you suffer. To make you feel the pain I felt when my mom and dad died.
Even though he said we had a connection, he never actually identified with me at all. He just saw his need for revenge. Nothing I've ever said, and nothing I can say now, is going to change his mind. This will end in one of two ways. He kills me, or I kill him. I bite down on the inside of my cheek, forcing myself to be calm. Your parents wouldn't want you to do this, I say, stalling for time. Think of Lucy and Jeremy. Without warning, he twists my wrists in his grip until I hear a snap. I cry out, unable to think about anything but the pain in my left arm, searing hot and impossibly brutal.
How dare you? You don't know a single thing about my parents.
But I do, my mother says, her voice hard.
They were good people.
They wouldn't have wanted this.
I don't believe a fucking word you say,
Jay hisses. Lucy was one of my closest friends, my mother continues. Jeremy and I were partners for most of our in-class training. Do you think I didn't mourn them? Do you really think it didn't destroy me inside and out to have to admit that I had lost them? Whatever you do to me, Jeremy, trust me, it can't be worse than what I've done to myself.
I don't care how sad you are,
Jay says.
Your bleeding heart isn't going to bring them back. I met you before the ship launched. Do you even remember? A month before takeoff at a dinner party for the family of the crew. They just announced that you and your husband would be the first set of caretakers. After dessert was served, you promised me you'd take care of my parents while they were in stasis. You looked me dead in the eye and said that to my face.
I remember, Jeremy, she says. I can do nothing but look between them, fighting the pain shooting up my arm long enough to focus on what's happening.
I told you that I'd been accepted on an astrophysical engineering course. That I wanted to be an astronaut to join the colony on Earth 2 one day.
Jay continues. He twists his head to the side and wipes away tears on his shoulder.
You said that you would make sure my mom and dad were waiting for me.
I did, my mother says. Quiet. Agonized.
It was all a lie,
he shouts. Let her go, Jeremy, my mother repeats. She's still struggling to sit up, her arms trembling with the effort. I admit it. I'm a terrible person. I've spent years hating myself for what I did, but please leave Romy out of this. She was only a little girl. This isn't her fault. She's a good person, the best. If you've been talking to her, you must know that.
Of course I know that!
Jay yells. He's breathing in short bursts, hot against my cheek.
But why should she get to live? Why should she get to be happy? If she didn't exist, my parents would still be alive.
Jay's hands are still squeezing around my broken wrist, so tight the pain makes my vision go black. My mother lets out a feeble, furious yowling sound, like a dying cat desperately trying to protect her kitten. She jerks out of the bed on wobbly legs, stumbling toward us with her arms raised. Through the spots in my vision, I can see something in her hand, something sharp and metallic. It's a hypodermic syringe filled with some kind of liquid. She dives for Jay, who pushes me away so that I stumble and nearly fall over. I catch myself on the end of the bed, my weight landing on my broken wrist and making me dizzy. By the time I steady myself enough to turn around, Jay has caught my mother's arm. They wrestle, but my mother is still weak from the stasis. It's only the threat of the syringe that keeps him from overpowering her immediately. I tear my eyes away from them. This might be my only chance to find another weapon, something better than the scissors I dropped in the corridor. I need to look now while Jay is distracted with my mother. Maybe I can save us both. I run over to the surgical counter and start pulling open drawers, scattering bandages and pill packets across the floor as I search for something, anything, sharp enough to hurt. Sharp enough to kill. A series of thuds sounds from behind me. I spin just in time to watch Jay overpower my mother. He pushes her hand down and jabs the needle of the syringe into her thigh. She lets out a horrified cry when he presses down on the plunger, but carries on fighting him. The syringe empties into her flesh, crimson blood filling up the chamber. Heat flushes through me. It's too late. He'll come for me next, and I've found nothing I can use to defend myself. Running across the room, I yank at the handle of a door, ignoring the sound of fighting behind me. As soon as I slam shut the door, I press the keypad on the wall. The lock slides into place with a neat click. Breath leaves me in a rush. I've bought myself a tiny bit of time. I'm in a supply cupboard. There must be something in here that I can use. Some kind of surgical equipment would work. I start rifling through boxes on the shelves, but I keep thinking about my mother's blood clouding the syringe. I wonder what was injected into her. It must be something dangerous if she was planning to use it as a weapon. I shake myself. I need to keep looking. The only way to help her now is to stop him. I sift through more bandages, tweezers, towels. Nothing useful. Nothing dangerous. There's a rattling at the door handle. Spinning around, I watch it move up and down, then fall still. Lights flash on the keypad. He's trying to get in. Diving across the room, I press buttons, trying to counter his orders. The door unlocks, and then locks again. This is the same system used for the doors on the Infinity. If I can take the front panel off the keypad, then I think I can cut the wires and break the lock so that Jay can't open it at all. It happened once to the bathroom door on the Infinity. The wiring failed and it froze shut. We had to take the door off its hinges. I grab a plastic bottle off the shelves and use it to smash the keypad, throwing all my weight into each swing until the plastic panel shatters into pieces. Jay's beeping pauses and then restarts. Faster. I pull at the panel until there's enough space to reach behind. I run my fingers over the wires, searching for the one I know will break the lock. I tear the wire free, pulling my hand away just as the circuit board sparks with electricity. The screen goes dark. It worked. The door shutters. He must be hitting it. He's going to break it down. The handle starts jerking like he's trying to work it free. A memory flashes across my mind. My mother, replacing a circuit board, saying to me, "Don't touch the wires, Romy. They'll shock you." I pick up the loose wire, still sparking with electricity, and press it to the metal door handle. A white flash blinds me as power jumps between them. There's a hoarse, pained noise. The handle stops moving. I hear a muffled thud as Jay falls to the floor. The fuse must have shorted because the soft ceiling lighting fades into black. I press my ear to the door, but I can't hear anything. The electricity could have been enough to kill him. I hope. My breathing sounds wet and loud in the silence. I still need a weapon just in case he's alive. I need to be prepared. I start searching through boxes by touch, carefully turning over items until I know what they are, until I'm certain they aren't useful. The lights come back on while I'm looking through the final shelf, illuminating a box labeled Scalpels. I open it with stiff, numb fingers, pulling out a sharp knife. This time, I don't even need to test the blade. When the shining metal catches the light, I realize I'm trembling. I brace my muscles, trying to stop it. I need a strong, firm grip. There's still no noise from the next room. I can't even hear my mother. I want to stay in here, safe and alone, but if there's a chance she's still alive, then I need to help her. I can't hide again like last time. I pull the emergency release lever at the top of the door. It slides open halfway, shutters, then stops in its tracks. Jay is lying on the floor. He's pale and his left arm is covered in dark burns from where he must have been holding the door handle when he was electrocuted. His breathing is shallow, but even. He's still alive. I turn sideways and squeeze through the gap between the door and the door jamb. The air smells of burnt meat, sharp and acrid. Jay groans and rolls toward me.
Romy?
His voice is hoarse.
I don't hesitate. I bend down and thrust the scalpel up into the side of his stomach.
It's so tough that for a moment I think I've hit his belt, until I feel the tacky warmth of blood in between my fingers. His face, still slack from unconsciousness, twists in pain. My eyes fill with tears, but I blink them away and twist the blade, driving it as far into his guts as I can reach. The impact vibrates down my arm as it hits something dense. Jay reaches up, hands sliding across my elbows, both of us slippery with blood. I pull free, driving the knife into his chest. Air explodes from his lungs in a thick, watery cough, and his hand comes up, fist pushing into the wound, trying to quench the blood. He drops his head back, making a sound that's half groan, half frustrated laugh.
I always told you that you were stronger than you realized, didn't I, Romy Silvers?
I stare down at him, my vision buzzing with spots of black. I can't think of anything worth saying to him. Instead, I turn to my mother. She's collapsed on the end of the hospital bed, looking down at the needle sticking out of her thigh. As soon as I read the resignation in her expression, I know it's hopeless. I pull out the needle and read the label on the syringe. It's a lethal injection. She sacrificed herself to protect me? I'm sorry, Romy, she says. It's not your fault. You tried your best. And I got him. He's dying. She gasps, grimacing in pain. That's not what I meant. I know what she means. Jay is a tiny droplet in the ocean of issues between us. Why did you do it? I whisper. How could you just let Dad die like that without even trying to save him? You just stood there. She opens her mouth to answer, but her eyes are already drifting shut. My mind replays the moment of his death, the look in her eyes when Dad fell into that smashed freezer door. But now I don't see anger and murderous rage. I see pain and fear and helplessness. She was lost and in agony. Sobs rack my body.
You left me alone. You left me all on my own.
I thought it was me. I thought she hated me so much that she couldn't look at me, that she would rather die in stasis than be alone with me. But she wanted a child so desperately that she removed her birth control. She ignored NASA's rules. I was wanted. I was really truly wanted. She loved me so much, so deeply. That just wasn't enough to stop the pain when her friends died because of that love.
I didn't want to hurt you, she whispers.
She looks so small and fragile. Nothing like the terrible version of her that exists in my memory. She saved me. She left me alone so that she wouldn't hurt me, too. I reach out to touch her neck, fingers pressed against her pulse. Jay lets out a long groan behind me, but I ignore him. He's too injured to move, let alone find another way to hurt me. There is nothing to fear here. Just a sad woman who has been in pain for a long time. She would never hurt me intentionally. She never meant to hurt Dad. I forgive you, I say finally. Not sure it's true yet, but knowing that one day, it will be. And I need her to hear it in her final moments. Her mouth forms the word sorry, but she's unconscious before she can make a sound. It takes a long time for her heart to still. By the time her eyes have stopped darting back and forth beneath her lids, the tears have dried on my cheeks. My mother is gone, at last. I wish things had been different. But part of me is glad that I got to say goodbye, instead of leaving her in stasis for the rest of my life, caught somewhere between life and death, neither of us able to move on. I stand up. My whole body screams in pain. At some point while I was holding my mother, Jay went still and silent. He looks so small now, so underwhelming. When I touch my foot to his shoulder, he doesn't react. He's dead. Jay is dead. My mother is dead. I'm alive. It was the only way this could have ended.
Hours since the eternity caught up. 41.
I leave my mother and Jay lying in the sick bay and stagger out of the room, dropping onto my hands and knees in the corridor. My chest feels tight, and every time I breathe, I think I'm about to start crying again, but the tears won't come. I'm in shock. I'm not having a heart attack, or a stroke, or dying. I'm just in shock. I curl up on the floor, staring at the mint green wall and shuddering, reliving the last few hours over and over. The dense sponginess of Jay's stomach when I pushed the knife inside him. The smell of burnt flesh after he was electrocuted. The feeling of him dragging me down the corridor, squeezing my wrists. The utter, heart-stopping fear when I realized that he was on the eternity with me. I can't focus on anything. Half-formed thoughts flicker through my mind, appearing and disappearing before I can process them. I want to go back into the sick bay to make sure Jay is really dead. I want to push his body out of the airlock so that he can never follow me again. I want to tear my brain out of my skull so I never remember what happened, so I can get rid of this awful, aching feeling. Finally, the only thing that gets me moving is the realization that I'm cold. My teeth are chattering. Shivering, clammy with sweat, I crawl down the corridor, searching for something. I'm not sure what. A door on my left slides open when I approach, and I go inside. It's a bathroom. I pull every towel out of the cupboard, wrapping them around me, layer after layer absorbing slick blood and salty sweat. What do I do now? What is next? They're gone. They're both gone. I want my own bunk. I want to be back on my ship, in the rooms I know. Not this alien mint green thing the size of a planet. I walk out of the bathroom, moving down another corridor, taking myself farther away from the sick bay. The thud of my heartbeat in my ears when Jay tried to unlock the supply cupboard door. His breath hot against my neck when he hissed into my ear. The shockwave of horror when he appeared in the stores, staring at me through the crack between packets. I walk, following lines of red and blue that light up in the floor. What do I do? I find a habitation area and sit on a sofa, still wrapped in a thick swath of blood-soaked towels. Jay's emails. Jay's awful, wonderful emails. I shudder, swallowing against the sour taste at the back of my mouth. The audio calls, hearing him breathe, waiting for me to speak. His silhouette standing in the doorway of the airlock when the ship's connected, standing and waiting for me to arrive and see him there. I tip over and, without quite realizing it, pass out.
Hours since the eternity caught up. 63. When I wake up, my eyes won't open. I rub at layers of sleep gunk and salt from crying, but my eyelashes still hurt when I force them open.
Jay, my mother. The sick bay, wires, scalpel.
I feel so dirty. There's blood all over me, scabbing and crisp and peeling. I long for my own ship, my own bed, my own life, my den to hide in. But I'm stuck here, at least for now. I walk to the bathroom, leaving a cocoon of towels on the sofa. There's a shallow ringing in my ears. My mouth is so dry, I'm not sure I could talk. When I open my lips, flakes of red blood fall to the floor. I wonder, vaguely, if it's mine. My left wrist is throbbing. I cradle it against my chest as I sift through drawers for a first aid kit. I tie it up, and then run a bath. When I rinse the last few days off my skin, it turns the water a pale brown. Whenever I jar my wrist, Jay's actions flash through my mind again. I push them away, focusing on just cleaning myself. One step at a time. Once I'm clean, then I can decide what to do next. Then I can think about all the things I need to do. Get back in touch with Molly. Learn how to operate this ship. Wait for the Infinity to catch up. Get rid of the bodies. But for now, all I need to do is clean myself. Brush my hair. Find some clothes. Eat. One step at a time, slow and easy, nothing scary, nothing to fill me with horror or freeze me with indecision. I close my eyes, tipping my head back and letting the water fill my ears until the low throbbing of the ship's rotation disappears into a heavy silence. Nice and simple.
Hours since the eternity caught up. 135. 3 days later, I finally feel like I can breathe again. I've spent most of that time in bed watching TV. Not Locke and Ness. Not yet. There are too many reminders of Jay in everything Jaden says. I watch films instead. Every Christmas and holiday romance I can find on the Eternity's hard drive. I can't stop watching. Whenever I go to the kitchen or bathroom or try to sleep or even just look away from the screen, Jay's face flashes through my mind. I know I'm going to have to face the memories eventually. I've been through this before, when Dad died. Molly used to tell me that I couldn't just pretend it hadn't happened. That I had to work through my feelings and accept them. But I'm not ready. Not yet. The only comfort is that I'm not afraid of my mother anymore. The thought of Mum just makes me feel achingly, tearfully sad. Which, I think, is an odd kind of progress. I finally understand her. For the first time in years. I know why she did the things she did. I know why she found it so hard to spend time with me after the deaths of the crew. I don't blame her. I even miss her now. She was trying to deal with the bad decisions she'd made in the best way she knew how. She never meant to hurt any of us. She was just too weak, too lost, too guilty. Everything I am, I get from my parents. I would never have survived Jay, survived life alone on the Infinity, if it wasn't for the skills they have given me. My mother taught me about emergency protocols, first aid and ship maintenance. I wouldn't have known how to detach the wires in the door to escape Jay if it hadn't been for her advice all those years ago. She saved my life. I've done some horrifying things. Things I never thought I was capable of. But it was right. I don't doubt that. It could have been a lot worse. For once, I did what I needed to do. I didn't panic. I didn't cry. I just did it. When I run out of rom-coms and my legs start to spasm from lying in one position for too long, I begin to explore the ship. At first, I check around every corner. Some part of my brain is still convinced that Jay is lying in wait, ready to pounce. But as I cover more ground, I start to relax. I'm alone. He's gone, forever. I defended myself, and I never need to be scared of him again. When I open the door of a room near the sick bay, it takes me a long time to process what's inside. Pods. Hundreds of them. Stasis chambers stretch as far as I can see. As soon as I realize what it means, that the new ship is full of sleeping people, and they are grown-ups, not just embryos, I burst into tears. I hadn't imagined there would be any stasis pods on this ship. Not after the astronauts died last time. But NASA must have fixed the technology. All this time, Jay was just the caretaker who stayed awake for the journey. He wasn't the main passenger. When I read the name Isaac Evans on the front of one of the pods, my tears increase with relief. Jay didn't kill him like I suspected. There's someone inside, so he must have forced him into stasis so he could get me alone. I walk the aisles, running my hands across the pods. NASA has sent me a whole colony. There are hundreds of people right here. I'm never going to be alone again. I wipe away my tears and press the revive button on the nearest pod. Happily Ever After by The Loneliest Girl. Fandom, Loch and Ness, 2042. Relationship, Jen. Tags, Space AU. Summary, Lyra is finally at peace. Author's note. Hi, Earth.
Hi, Molly.
It's been a long time. A lot has happened recently, but I'm not quite sure how to put it into words. The ships have met and joined together now. The Eternity did have to slow down for a while and wait for the Infinity to catch up, but we recovered the speed. Our estimated arrival date on Earth 2 is now November 2071. I'll be 20. For once, I'm not scared. I can't wait. I'm not sure what it will be like on Earth 2 or what problems we might have to deal with during the rest of our journey. But whatever happens, I think I can handle it. Molly, I can't say that I've become the confident, brave woman you hoped I would, but I think I'm getting there. I think I'm going to be okay, Molly. I really do. Love, Romy. Lyra wiped sweat off her forehead, peering up into the pink sky. She stretched out on her back, which ached after a morning spent planting seedlings. The three moons gleamed brightly overhead, crossing the sky in a not quite straight line. Only a few more minutes until they aligned, she decided. She pulled out her water bottle and drank deeply, eyes following the infinite eternity as it landed in a cloud of luminescent dust, bringing in a cargo of minerals to the colony from the next planet over.
"Happy anniversary,"
a little girl said, as she ran down the lane. Lyra smiled after her, watching an excitable puppy jump around at the girl's ankles. When she looked back up at the sky, the moons had made a perfect stripe across the horizon. 5 years today, Lyra murmured, hardly able to believe it. Doesn't time fly? Finn. This is Lauren Ezzo. We hope you have enjoyed this unabridged production of The Loneliest Girl in the Universe by Lauren James. Presented by Harper Teen and Harper Audio. This program was produced by Elgin Productions. Executive producer, Caitlin Garing. Text copyright 2017 by Lauren James. Production copyright 2018 by HarperCollins Publishers. All rights reserved. Thank you for listening.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.